Hi, welcome
Well,
to Courtney's podcast.
exactly. Lucas, you're already doing all the intros for me and everything. That's so great.
This has
All right.
been a Courtney podcast, sponsored by Courtney.
Thanks, Lucas. Yeah, I just sponsor myself. That's all I do.
Let's talk about films and shit.
Hey guys, welcome to Ghost Facing It, which is the podcast where we talk favorite films with some of my favorite people. And I'm here today keeping it in the family again with my mom, Catherine Garbera. Mom, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for coming on my podcast. I will not address you by your first name as requested, even though I want to.
Good. I will not address you by any nicknames that you don't want out in the public.
I do appreciate that. That'd be for the best. And what movie are we talking today?
Lethal Weapon.
Which, there's a big debate. It's Christmas time, so there's always a little bit of a debate in our house of which is the better Christmas action movie, Lethal Weapon or Die Hard, which caused a bit of a thing last year when I put it on Facebook and everybody sided with me and Die Hard.
I feel like, just as a disclaimer, I don't really have any big passion around one being more Christmassy than the other. It's just when we talk about action movies that are set at Christmas time, I have a clear preference. And it's not exactly what everybody else thinks. But when Courtney posted last year on Facebook, hey, mom, hey, everybody, help my mom and I settle this, our jokey little thing turned into, what, is she crazy? Lethal Weapon's not a Christmas movie. It's always Die Hard. Die Hard. She's a nut job. Blah, blah, blah.
I don't think anybody called my, just, I don't think anybody called my mom a nut job. I think she's a little bit exaggerating there, just for the record.
A little bit, but felt like.
I felt called out and like I was being called a nut job. Mom, before we get into it, what are you up to? What do you have going on? What's your like Twitter handle, if you want to share that with everybody?
Oh, sure. I'm on Twitter. Well, I'm a romance novelist, and I've written over 100 books, mainly for Harlequin. In the UK, they publish as Mills and Boone. I write contemporary romance. I've written some suspense in the past. I have a new book out right now, Texas Christmas Tycoon. Obviously set in Texas. It's also a Christmas story, and spoiler alert, he might be a tycoon.
I was about to say, that was I love romance novel titles because they're very, they're like the Da Vinci Code. You're like, I don't know what it could be about. What could this be about?
Yeah, I am on Twitter, Catherine Garbera, with no E on Catherine, because I don't know if it's still the case, but when I signed onto Twitter, your handle could only be a certain number of characters long, and my name's too long for that.
I don't think it is. Oh, I didn't even know, I never noticed that on Twitter, like that. Yeah. You don't have an E in it. Wow, yeah. Now I do.
I'm on everything as Catherine Garbera. Facebook, Instagram,
so
Twitter.
It's a Catherine, like, hard on Twitter, because it doesn't have the E on it.
It cuts off. Yeah, it cuts off with the E. Yeah. So that's a thing.
Mom, you're like, oh, I guess so. Mom, only nut jobs think that. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I knew it.
All right, so we're going to start off with the 30-second summary of Lethal Weapon. So, Mom, in 30 seconds or less, you need to explain the Lethal Weapon in the entirety of its plot. Can you do that?
Yes.
All right.
She said hesitantly.
Do you want me to count you down, or do you just want to go?
Just go.
All right. And go.
Lethal Weapon, at its heart, is a basic mystery. And also, at the same time, it is like a buddy movie. So it starts with a suicide that we later learn is a murder. And we're introduced to the two characters, Riggs, who is a little bit on the edge and crazy. And they establish that right from the beginning. And then Murtaugh, who is this family man, and they start, like, when first time we see him, he's in the bathtub, it's his 50th birthday, and all of his family come in to meet
and
him.
Stop.
Oh my gosh, okay, let's
all right,
do it
do you
again.
Do you want to try it again?
Yes, let's
okay.
Try again.
All right, so we're going to start from the top. All right, ready, and go.
Okay. Lethal Weapon is an action movie, but also it's basic mystery. So we start with the crime, which is a suicide, which we later learn is a murder. And we are introduced to the two detectives who are going to be on this case. We learn that one's crazy, one's more established. And as much as it's about solving the mystery, which goes from being a suicide, then they learn it's a murder, then they learn it's the murder of someone that one of them knows, and then they solve the crime. It's also about these two people learning to work together.
That was 29 seconds, Mom.
Oh my gosh.
It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
It is.
And I do feel like you didn't really get into the central mystery of it. Like, it didn't dive really deep into the murder, into the suicide attempted murder, but that's okay, because we'll get a little bit more into that. It's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's it. I love it. I love watching other people try to do it, but then I had to do it that one time, and I was like, oh, this is awful.
Yeah, I don't think I did very well, but...
You did. You did all right. We'll go a little bit further into the plot of Lethal Weapon, which Lethal Weapon's a lot of fun, because it is. It's a modern noir, especially... I really love the soundtrack, which I was surprised yesterday. I tried to listen to the... I didn't get to listen to the whole soundtrack.
Right.
But it is very noirish, which really works. And I do want to talk a little bit about Shane Black, because I think he does that really well, like when you look at how he writes it. And obviously, Shane Black does a lot of Christmas... His movies are a lot of the time set at Christmas. You have this one, you have Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you have Iron Man 3, you have The Nice Guys.
Right.
What do you think it is about Christmas that lends itself to this not really a dark side, because this movie's a little dark, but not too dark. He does keep it light, but there's something about Christmas time. There's always there's the fun Christmas movie. And I would say Die Hard's a little more fun than this one in that sense.
Yes.
But this one's much more about, like, that hint of darkness. What is it about Christmas that lends itself to that?
I think as much as Christmas is, like, the happiest time of year, it's also, for a lot of people, the saddest time of year. Because it like, really shines a spotlight on if you're alone, it makes you feel more alone. Right. If you, you know, like, and if your crime doesn't stop, bad things don't stop, bad people don't stop doing bad things. And so I think, like, what he does really, what Shane, and this is just my opinion, obviously, on what Shane Black does well and why he uses Christmas is a built-in happy time. So it gives him a nice place to put, like, a juxtaposition of a crime, a dark crime, or someone who's going through stuff at Christmas and seeing how... I think Riggs even says it in here, the reason what keeps him going is the job. So having this crime happen at Christmas actually helps him get through Christmas and to process some stuff. And of course it happens that he has a new partner who changes his perspective and gives him a different view of the world instead of his lonely view, which I think that a lot of times in those Shane Black Christmas movies, we are seeing someone who is making a connection and, you know, Christmas becomes better because of those connections.
Right, and we do see that loneliness with Riggs, especially at the beginning, and Mel Gibson is really good in this movie, especially the scene with the gun and the bullet. Like, that's just a really great scene. But then we have the other side of it with Murtaugh, because Riggs and Murtaugh really balance each other, because Riggs is alone, he has his dog, he lives in his little trailer, and then you have Murtaugh, who's, like, he has, like, the white picket fence, he has the family, and, like you said, like, he's celebrating his 50th birthday.
Right.
And he's been on the force. He's one of those that everybody likes to work with, which is very in contrast with Riggs is being passed around because he has we see several incidents with him where he's successful, but...
He gets the job done.
Yes.
But he's a little bit on the edge, and you wonder, and they even have a good scene with Riggs and Murtaugh in here. He's getting the job done, but you wonder, who's going to be the collateral damage? So far, we know that Riggs doesn't care I don't want to say he doesn't care if he lives or dies, but he's not afraid to die, and he's not afraid to go to that edge if he needs to.
Right, that's what I like about Riggs. He has that line, and there's a lot of great dialogue. We were talking a little bit about this yesterday. There's a lot of great dialogue in this, and Shane Black's really great at dialogue. But he has that line that says, I don't want to die. He's like, I'm not afraid. Like you said, he's like, I'm not afraid to die. So I don't think he really wants to die, but he's made peace with it. So he's just like... If this is what happens today, this is what happens. And I think, like earlier, and I know they describe him as crazy, but obviously, that was another thing. They're both Vietnam veterans. And obviously, there was a huge mental health issue that wasn't addressed at that time. And then there was that stigma with Vietnam veterans.
Right.
And then, like, moving forward. So it was interesting to see, like, a modern perspective on Riggs, who clearly has...
Yeah.
Like, some sort of, something beyond, like, he's not just crazy, like, it's actually, like, a mental health, like...
I think so. I like to, if you think about it, is how their wives, even Murtaugh's wife, who's dead for a couple of years when the story opens, I mean, Riggs' wife.
I was going to say.
Riggs' wife.
I was like, Murtaugh's wife is alive and well.
But how they are kind of balancing them. Like, you see that with Murtaugh is, like... He doesn't talk about Vietnam at home, and now that he has his family and he's not connected because the murder is tied to a friend of his from the past who was in Vietnam. And she's like, oh, I don't know him. Oh, is he one of your Vietnam buddies? And it's like, yes, you can see how these how these men have compartmentalized their life. And it's like Vietnam is one part of it.
Right.
And it's definitely made them who they are, the paths that they have each chosen.
Right.
Even our bad guys, it kind of stems from Vietnam. The paths that they choose comes from that incident.
Yeah.
And it like makes them the men that they are today, and how they deal with it is a little bit different. And I think once Riggs' wife died, he didn't have his grounding. As a romance writer, that's what I like about this, is that that relationship kind of grounds both of them. And when
right.
when that's taken away from Riggs, he's kind of loose. He's out there. And it's not that he wants to die, but he doesn't have anyone to ground him.
Right.
And I'm sorry. But no, and Murtaugh right. becomes that for him.
Yeah, he does. You see, it's a natural progression. And even though it's like a quick progression, like you could tell they click. Like,
yeah,
it is almost like not a soulmate situation, but it almost is. Like, they are, like, that's what they need. And he needs a little bit of that Riggs in his life, because I think he likes being a family, I think Murtaugh likes being a family man.
Right.
I think he's very comfortable, and he likes being mostly by the rules and everything. But I think I think that brings out a better side of him as well.
It makes him stronger and better in that role.
Yeah. So I was actually gonna say, Riggs is really a character I know you really like.
Yes.
Like, that's... But, like, he's, like, one of those heroes that, like, you write. Do you think he's, a majority of, like, the romance community? I know you can't speak to the entire romance community. But what is it about Riggs especially? Because I think Murtaugh's an attractive, like how he is. Because he's a family man. He's kind of, like, Riggs is the guy you kind of fall in love with. And then Murtaugh's, like, the guy you settle down with a little bit. Even though they both have, like, a different thing. But what is it about, like, that kind of character that tends to draw, especially, like, but you look at romance novels, like, that's
right.
the kind of character that tends to be, like, a romance hero.
I think that one of the things that I like best about romance is how finding your partner brings you back into the world. So a lot of times with a Riggs hero, he is on the edge. He's isolated himself. His best friend is the dog. And he's not living in a community, he's living in that camper van kind of thing.
Yes.
And he does his job, and that's it. Even his, like, romantic connections, we do see where he hires a hooker to come home and watch TV with him. It's not about sex, it's about companionship.
Right.
And I think why that is so appealing is because we all want to think about love and the healing power of love and the healing power of, like, finding that connection. I think our hope is that Riggs becomes Murtaugh.
Right.
That character who's broken and on the outside,
right,
falls in love with the right person, then becomes this family man. And,
right.
you know, we know that some things, like, especially with, I think he's, I would say they're both alpha males, but there's, like, built into our DNA is you want someone who you feel will keep you safe and who will protect you. But you know, I think, I don't know, it might be archaic, but you also think about the woman bringing stuff to him, making him stronger as a person who actually, I mean, because the warrior, you don't need that every day in everyday life, but you do need that man to be strong and to be doing his job and all those things.
And I think Lethal Weapon, I think I might mention this yesterday, is an interesting look at masculinity, because it's not like Stallone or Schwarzenegger, where, like, because Danny Glover and Mel Gibson, they're like you said, they have that alpha male, they are the alpha males in this, but it is a different look at it. And they are both, like, they're open. What Riggs is, I mean, like, because he doesn't really shy away that he clearly has it. He doesn't really talk to anybody, because the therapist at one point is trying to talk to his captain and is like, you need to do something, otherwise he's going to kill himself. And then the captain is one of my favorite lines. He's like, well, let's see if he kills himself and then I'll be wrong, or whatever that line is. Which, like, you know, not to make light of, like, suicide, like, that's obviously a clearly, but, like, it's just, like, I think they're an interesting look. And then I actually think you can kind of tie that to Die Hard as well, because we were watching that thing last night where they said John McClane isn't, like, a typical action hero either. And it's interesting that these two movies, like, that are at Christmas time, have these action heroes who... And I think this one is... I'm getting off my point.
Yeah.
I think this one's a more interesting look at masculinity, I think, than Die Hard, because it is that, like, it's not just, like, oh, he has muscles, oh, this, and this. Like, they're smart as well.
Right.
Especially when, like, they keep joking that there's another prostitute that saw her jump off, and they said, oh, it's thin, and then they end up looking more into it, and it ends up being, like, bigger and bigger. So there is, like, that, it is the very modern hero, more like the Jason Bourne than, like, Rambo or in that. And like, actually, Rambo's a good comparison because he's also that Vietnam veteran.
And I think you can look at Rambo in terms of like when we're talking, I know I'm bringing it back to romance type stereotypes, but Rambo has nobody. Like, there's no woman.
No, he comes back, and it literally is just, he didn't leave a sweetheart behind. No. He didn't, like, he just wants to go live alone and isolated.
And there's no one who doesn't even have a Murtaugh. There's no one who accepts him and brings him back to the community so that he can have a normal functioning life. Rambo's always going to be on the outside.
Right. Which I think Riggs is, like, on the border of that, but he had someone when he came back. Which was the difference of that. So
yeah.
I don't really have much more to add to that. I just thought it was interesting to look at. Except for at the end where we have that ridiculous lawn fight.
Like, well, I think... I agree. We did talk about that. But I do think, like, with that lawn fight, it's a little bit the viewership of those kind of movies in the 80s. I mean, I think, you know, like, guys want to see that fight.
Right.
And so they're like, okay, we'll throw that in at the end. And like you said, I mean, if you want someone to go full-on crazy, Gary Busey is definitely your man.
Oh, again, I was just joking. And I think at one point, maybe Gary Busey was just wandering around and Richard Donner was like, does anybody have a camera? It's like Bowfinger. We'll just work it in. Like, we'll make this work. Gary Busey's actually really good in this. I like him as Mr. Joshua. He's not even the main villain. He's not really a lackey, but he is the lackey.
He's like the number one.
Yeah. You know, so he's not, but he's the more memorable, I think, of the two big bads who are working together. He's more memorable. To be honest, I can't tell you. I think the guy's like a colonel or something.
Yes.
I couldn't even, like, to be honest, like Gary Busey's the more memorable baddie of this.
He is.
Because he does, and they have that scene, like, where, like, he burns Mr. Joshua's, arm and like he just like stands there and takes it.
Yeah.
Gary Busey's full on Gary Busey in that scene.
Well,
I mean in the best way. Like.
Yeah. I think too, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me like Shane Black did with that is that Gary Busey's character, Mr. Joshua and Martin Riggs
they're two sides of the same coin. Yes,
and I think in a way, sort of, not as much, not as well as Murtaugh in the general.
Yeah.
Because they're at a different level of
you're seeing mirror images of both of your heroes.
Right. And definitely because we see the shot that Mr. Joshua takes from the helicopter and we learn earlier that Riggs's character was a sniper in Vietnam and he can take a shot, like I think they say 70 feet in the wind, which like there's not a lot of people who can make that shot. And so then we see Mr. Joshua in the, I know that's his name. It sounds so silly. But
that's one of the things I love about it is that it's like Mr. Joshua. It feels like those Bank Heist movies where everybody just calls each other. Like when you look at Baby Driver and they all call each other by their whatever their code names are. Like, I love stuff like that. It has that, like, fun quality to it.
It does. Yeah, so we know that these men are equals.
Right.
But, of course, the good guy has to win. And I do like... One of the things, I don't know, we'll get to it probably later, but at the end, after they're having their fight, and Riggs has that point at the end of the fight where he could snap his neck and kill him, and that's how we see that Riggs is a police officer and not a mercenary, not a bad... He's like, no, it's not where he gets up. I mean, they do end up killing him because
Mr. Joshua retaliates,
he reaches for someone's gun.
But that's an important scene because Murtaugh says it, because Riggs does have a tendency just to kind of shoot, he shoots the right people, but he has a tendency to, a lot of people end up dead around Riggs.
Yes.
So, and then Murtaugh makes that point, and then at the end it's Riggs and Murtaugh that kill Joshua.
Yeah.
And I think a little Riggs did it so that, because I think he sensed that Murtaugh was going to shoot, so that maybe that wouldn't be so much on Murtaugh's, I killed someone. Which, I mean, like, they both shoot, but, like, I think it's important that Riggs shoots along with Murtaugh. Like, that's a...
I do. I think that is also one of the things that I like about Lethal Weapon is that there is a body count, but it doesn't make sense. Like, anybody who gets shot, they make a point of, like, Murtaugh saying, we really don't need to be killing everybody. You know, we can't question a dead guy.
Right.
And I think that that's a little bit different than a lot of action movies where it is just, like, especially coming out of the 70s. I know this one's in the late 80s, but if you think about, like, Dirty Harry or what's his name? Bronson films.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like there was a lot of high body count. And
right.
I probably shouldn't have brought those up because I haven't watched them, so I can't speak to it with. But no, it does but it feel just feel like
well, because you do have those grittier movies that came out of the 70s, and 60s and 70s, and then Lethal Weapon and Die Hard both they're the reason we have the modern action movies we have today.
Right.
Like that, like I said, that show we were watching last night kind of pointed it out that. After Die Hard came out, like, everything became Die Hard on a plane, Die Hard on a bus.
Right.
But even Lethal Weapon, the way that they handle everything, I think. Because, I mean, it's not like the buddy cop comedy was new,
no,
but this was a
like
new side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have, like, 48 Hours, or even, like, Beverly Hills Cop,
yes.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, so I think, like, Lethal Weapon was, and I think it's a testament to Shane Black. I think he really saw something and was like, I want to do this, and I want to, because noir usually is, it's the lone private investigator,
right.
And he managed to do a noir that you have the lone private investigators, but they have to come together because they need each other to solve it, because
right.
They have what it takes. The mystery is actually really great in this, and it unfolds slowly, and I really like the pace of this movie, because it doesn't fold, and then, but you do get a lot of Riggs and Murtaugh, like, them coming to, they balance everything really well, which
right.
I was surprised, like, they should have taken two movies. Like now, I think it would take
right.
two movies, but Shane Black really balances, and Richard Donner as well, it's a testament to him as a director,
right. Yeah,
that he balances it so well, because, what like, it's usually, it would be, like, one or the other, like, you either, this is their first partnership, so let's have some plot that doesn't really matter, let's focus
right.
on that, or let's have this kind of interesting suicide that turns into a murder, that turns into this bigger, not conspiracy, but something that's a lot bigger, connected back to Vietnam and all this.
Right.
Like, and he manages to balance it really well, I think.
I think part of how he does that is that making it personal.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts out as a suicide, and then, well, and he drops, like, little breadcrumbs, but they're just, and they feel natural. Like, when the wife says before he leaves, oh, this guy's been trying to get in touch with you.
Right, which Murtaugh later realizes he doesn't know his daughter's dead yet. He was
no.
trying to get in touch with him for something else, which
right.
is why the daughter was killed.
Yeah, and so it's like, it's nice the way that everything's there, and it's not, and it is just a simple, straightforward, I mean, it's a simple, straightforward mystery, which it needs to be.
Right.
Because the focus is almost, I would almost say it's like 3/4 on the relationship and building the relationship.
Yeah.
And then the mystery is like a nice little
well,
thing.
Because we get a lot of instances, especially with Riggs. We see, before he meets Murtaugh, we see like, I think it's like 3 or 4 where,
yeah.
which is why Riggs gets passed around. You kind of see
yeah.
different reasons why. Like, one's really serious. There's a shooter at a school and he's shooting kids.
Right.
And Riggs just goes up and shoots him. Which I was reading the IMDb trivia. And I guess in Shane Black's original script, it was a lot more like, violence heavy, but like instead of just shooting the shooter, he takes like a rocket like grenade
oh
and like which doesn't make any sense. Like
no.
It makes more sense that he just stands there and shoots them. But then we see like the one that I really like is when he's with the Christmas tree / cocaine dealers. Like that's another
yeah.
one. Like so we see a bunch of little Riggs instances where he is like reckless and stuff. And then we don't Murtaugh's really involved with that mystery first because
right.
he goes and then he realizes who the girl is.
Yeah.
And then they meet the prostitute that they have to track down later who ends up dead. The body count is pretty high in this movie because a lot of people end up.
Right.
Because they're all collateral damage of this.
Of the bad guys.
Yeah.
I didn't get to that in my 30 seconds. But you do see how they're cleaning up the trail. Like he's cleaning, the bad guys are cleaning up their trail so
yeah.
that you can't be traced. And for our good guys are just a step behind because obviously they're drawing picture, they're drawing everything together from a very,
like, slowly.
Yeah, because they're trying to find it. And then once they know what's going on, we see them start making a good plan. We see them start kind of taking control of that action part.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's really good.
I think he does. I think he unfolds well. And actually, I think a little bit, have you seen The Nice Guys? With Russell Crowe?
No,
wrestling?
I don't think I have.
So, Mom, you're like, oh, Courtney, I don't want to watch it. but it is actually, what Shane Black did really well with Lethal Weapon, he also does really well with The Nice Guys, which is just bringing these two, which The Nice Guys is actually not thinking about it. Nice Guys is really similar to Lethal Weapon in that respect, because it's these two guys coming together, but there's this little mystery that they both have pieces to.
Right.
And it's not until they're, like, really together and able to, like, bounce it off one another. You would like The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
I'm not going to push it.
I know.
But I'm just saying, it is Christmas time. Another Shane Black movie takes place at Christmas.
One thing we talked about a little bit is that I really like the what Shane Black does with male relationships, and they're not. I mean, obviously he's a man, so he gets male friendship,
right?
Because I think he does that really well, and he shows that it's not all locker room humor or all, you know, like any. I mean, they're real. They're real people, and that I think that's what grounds this movie is that budding friendship, and I assume it does in The Nice Guys too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about Iron Man 3, I'm taking a leap here, but if you think about Tony and the kid.
Yeah, no, he does. He looks at that. He does. Yeah. He has an interesting way of looking at, like, the male dynamic. And again, mm-hmm. I think he does have an interesting view on masculinity because it isn't that, oorah, we're all men.
Right.
We, you know, like, which I think we've gotten better as a society. I think writers have gotten better, and we're seeing that, like, you know, like, the 70s and 60s, it was, like, you know, you had to have those, like, huge right. guys
yeah.
who were action stars, and, like, they didn't do feelings. They just, like, they shot it.
Yeah.
And, actually, Rambo, a little bit, is very emotional. Sylvester Stallone's actually really, Sylvester Stallone's not the typical action hero either, because all his movies are emotional. So, I didn't mean to lump Sylvester Stallone in those. Because especially, like, you look at, like, Rocky and stuff, who Rocky is... He is an alpha male, but he is very emotional. Like, he's not afraid of his emotion. So, I'm sorry, Sylvester Stallone, I did not mean to lump you in, like, with those movies. As soon as I said it, I was like, no. But I think it is interesting to see Shane Black's view on the male dynamic.
Right.
And just to see that there's not a ton of female characters now that I'm thinking about it in Shane Black movies. Like, he does really focus, but I think it's something I wonder if he...
When the women come in... You know, it is male-centric, but when the women come in, they're strong women. If you look at Murtaugh's wife...
Right.
She is clearly... she's the one keeping everything together at home, and she's clearly respected and by him, and even Riggs, and we see it develop more over the next few movies.
Right.
The only other woman that we really get a chance to see in this one is the psychiatrist, but we don't see her very much.
No, and she's in more of the movies, right? It's been a while since I've seen. And it was Mary Ellen Trainor who I was like the whole time. I got really excited when the credits came on. I was like, oh, Mary Ellen Trainor, because I like her. But she plays a bigger part.
Yeah,
like in the movies to come.
Yes, and one thing, and especially in the other movies, we get to see it more because we get to see more of their team as other things happen. Is that the women are not just. They're not just there for set dressing. They usually have something important that they're bringing to the plot, and the relationships are legitimate. They're not just, you know, I'm here to, because we need to have, like, you know, boobs and ass. It's not, it's more than that.
There are a lot of boobs and ass in this movie, though, especially within the first, like, 10 minutes.
Well,
we get boobs, and then, well, it is equal opportunity.
It is.
Because we get boobs, but we also get Mel Gibson's ass. So you get a little... I mean, get a little TNA right away.
Yeah, and it for everybody. Something in it for everyone. Yeah.
And this movie takes place in the 80s. Right. It's very 80s. Just not so much the music, not as much as like Beverly Hills Cops has a very 80s soundtrack.
Because
it has the dun, 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 like the synth.
Yeah.
Where this has more noir, but you have very 80s. Everybody looks very 80s. Like we were talking a little bit about Mel Gibson's hair. But like there's cocaine everywhere. Like it just like it's Los Angeles in the 80s. So it's one of those things, like, cocaine shows up on the screen in my head. I was thinking, oh, of course. I mean, it's 1987 in Los Angeles. Like, what else would be, like, one of the... But I think the 80s is the perfect set for at least this first one. Because I think it's obviously modern for that time.
Right.
I don't know if it would work as well today. I know they did the Lethal Weapon TV show, which I have not watched.
I
know they brought it modern. And it's had some behind-the-scenes issues with both of its leads, I think.
Oh,
mostly the one that played Riggs.
Yeah.
But do you think this works now, or do you think it works because it started in the 80s, and that was a very, like...
No, I do think it would work today, because what he's doing is making it contemporary to that time. So, like, Vietnam was an issue for men. I mean, like, there was a lot of stuff from Vietnam happening in the 80s, and that's a thing. But there's still two cops. One's in homicide, one starts in drugs. And then they end up working together as partners. So, I mean, there's still things. There are still men who are on the edge. It could even be women. There's still cops that are on the edge. There are still cops who are good family men who are good. You know, and it's good to see that thing happening. And I think, like, probably today, given I mean, in the U.S., probably around the world, but definitely in the U.S., I would imagine that there's a good place to explore that. And I think probably seeing a good, strong relationships between the community and the cops and, you know, like, that might be a good thing to see.
And they do touch on it, and it's a little bit of a joke because they talk to the kid. It's not a joke, but it is social, they do it light, but they do make the point that, like, because they're talking to the kids, and the kids are like, don't cops shoot black people, like, we shouldn't talk to the cops. Like, and I think it'd be interesting for it to be done today and them to explore that, because there's an issue in the United States right now, and them to explore that, I think, but it's not made light, but it is, like you said, it is a little light, but they kind of bring it up, but they don't explore it as much.
Right.
But this was before the Rodney King riots.
It was.
And everything like that. So I think, obviously, there was that issue, and there was that acknowledgement of it.
Right, and they touch on it. One thing I will say about Lethal Weapon is they don't shy away from any of those race problems that they were having with the LAPD at that time. Because, like, that was an issue. That's what led up to Rodney King and all of that. And so it's nice that they address it, but that's not the central story, and he doesn't take it to you have to acknowledge it, because those kids, obviously, because
they've seen that, and that's reality. And unfortunately, that's also still, like, the American experience for some people, which is just, like, but so it'd be interesting, I think, to see, like, how maybe we could explore that, like, if they did, like, well, again, I haven't watched the TV show, so I don't know how the TV show, if they, like, go deeper into that, but it would be interesting, because they do kind of lend itself to explore that, I think, a little more.
Yeah, and I know in the second movie and in the third movie, that's still an issue, because there's, like, a shootout with the gang, and Murtaugh takes a shot, and the kid that ends up getting killed is someone that he knows. They're dealing with it more from that this kid could have easily been his son, you know, if he hadn't been the family man he is. And, you know, like, they do, I think that's Lethal Weapon 2.
To be honest, 4? I've seen Lethal Weapon twice, first one twice, and Lethal Weapon 2 once. That's the one where he's on the toilet and there's a bomb on the toilet.
Yes.
Which I was confusing with the first one. I haven't seen three or four.
That one is dealing with apartheid.
Right, which they do have in the... Yes. In the Murtaugh household, like, on the side of it, it says free South Africa and apartheid. So
yeah.
I think it's good to see both sides of it. I think Shane Black did a good job kind of balancing it. It would have been, I think, like, to continue that maybe and bring it up a little more. That's what I'm saying, like, with a modern take.
On the next one.
To bring it up. So I think it's good to explore that.
Yeah.
I think it would have been interesting to, but like you said, like, that's not what the story is about, but it is, like, they don't shy away from it, which is good. And it's a tough subject, so.
It is.
And it is one of those things, like, there was that issue. I think that's what keeps the story kind of modern, is unfortunately modern, which is, like, nothing really changes, because that question could definitely be asked today as well. So it's just one of those, like.
Well, yeah, and if the people are supposed to be keeping you safe, you don't trust.
Right.
I mean, like, and that is, those kids aren't sure. I mean, like, they know that the cops are there to bust Dixie.
Yes.
Because she's a prostitute and they come all the time and they're used to seeing them, and they also, it's not like they're not rushing to help the cops. They don't really trust them. And
no.
And they're little kids. They're like 6 or 7.
Which is very funny when they arrive, when they say, oh, you're going to see Dixie? And then they all go like, you're going to fuck Dixie. And it's just these little kids cursing, and you're just like, that. Like, that's another moment of like again, Shane Black balances, I think, the levity a lot with the darker side of it.
Right.
That was really funny. That's one of those lines that I thought was really funny. All right, Mom. Our time has come.
For what?
Lethal Weapon versus Die Hard.
Oh, good thing we watched that movie so I could remember everything about Die Hard. I mean,
I wish we had watched Die Hard last night, too. So, like we were saying earlier, so last year we were having a very friendly... We were talking, and I was like, no, Die Hard is the better Christmas movie. And, of course, you should never put anything on the internet, because it just gets out of control really quickly, because it did. No one called my mom a nut job. That was her embellishing a little bit.
There were some pretty strong comments on your Facebook.
But
Don't at me. No.
Definitely at her. If everybody could just call her a nut job, that'd be really great. So what is it? So it is funny that these two action movies, I'm sure there's other ones, obviously, that take place at Christmas time. I think these two are the most prevalent. But what do you think it is, coming from your side of it? Because I think I know what makes Die Hard so enjoyable for me, especially as a Christmas movie. It's usually what I try to watch to kick off Christmas. That and White Christmas, which are two completely separate movies. But what like, do you see the side of everybody that loves Die Hard as a Christmas movie? Do you see, like, what makes it?
I would have to say I think the movies are actually quite similar.
They are.
And especially since we saw that. I mean, we have the buddy thing via the radio with Reginald Bell Johnson. I can't think of his character's name. The cop in the car who's, like, talking him through it. So we see that. And he is trying to, he is there to make up for the, you know, like, he shouldn't have let his wife leave. He wants to try to get her back, that kind of thing. I think the difference is that whereas Lethal Weapon is called an action movie and there are action scenes, Die Hard is, it's the action that is grounding Die Hard.
Yes.
And some of it is over the top, but you want that in an action movie. You don't want to have, I mean, like, I feel like Lethal Weapon is almost like a more, this is a normal life type movie, whereas Die Hard is, like, in your face, your bad guy's big.
Yeah.
Everything's, like, a million times bigger.
Yeah, everything's like, everything, because it's a, excuse me, sorry, everything's a investigation and they're two cops. So, right. Like, whereas in Die Hard, John McClane, like you said, he flew out to Los Angeles, he's going to apologize to his wife, he ends up at this party that happens to be when these robbers come into Nakatomi Plaza and take the building hostage. Like, it's very unintentional that he falls into this, and he's able to handle it because he is a cop.
Right.
But at the same time, like, these, like, Riggs and Murtaugh know what they're getting into
once they realize what's going on.
And then everything slowly unfolds for John McClane. Which I was saying this yesterday, I really like the progression of it where they make him more and more vulnerable. Like, they continually stack stuff against John.
Right.
Because, like, he loses his shoes because someone on the plane told him, like, for jet lag, if you take off your shoes and curl your toes.
Right.
And he's trying to calm down. And then that's when all the action starts. So he ends up having to leave very quickly, like, without his shoes. Like, there's that one scene where he has to walk across glass.
Right. It becomes a thing. So they use that.
That. And then, like, he progressively loses, like, because I think, like, he takes off his jacket and takes off his first shirt.
He loses his clothes because he's got to have muscles.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, Bruce, we need some muscles. Yeah, please. Do you think John McClane is, like, I know you said, like, kind of Riggs and Murtaugh, but more so Riggs, is, like, attractive as, like, a, like, that hero. Do you think John McClane is an attractive, like, romance, almost like a romance novel hero, or do you think, what is it about Riggs over McClane?
I don't know. I mean, I think that, and based on the fact that we do have more movies, so we see him as a romantic hero, I don't think John McClane gets, like, I don't know what his connection is to his wife. I mean, we know that he wants to stay with her.
Right.
But, and he didn't lose her, whereas Riggs lost his wife, and it's like, always when someone dies, no matter what the relationship was, you always remember the good things.
Right.
You don't remember, I mean, it's very odd that you remember the bad if it's someone that you love. You kind of, like, brush aside all the bad things and you remember the good things. So, you know, like, he has that loss, and I think that's a strong thing. Whereas McClane is trying to get back with his wife. We know from the second movie it didn't work out very well.
No, they're together in the second movie, but from, like, the third on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then at one, I think on, like, Die Hard 5, they're like, oh, Holly's dead. Like, they just kill her, and you're just like, after they've divorced, you're just like, all right, well.
But I think the difference is that McClane, and I guess they kind of, a little bit allude to this, but he is all about the job. And he's like a workaholic.
That was the issue.
Yeah.
Which is another great part of it. It does play out, and it ends up being like,
he's married to his job.
Right, he is married to his job, but also it ends up being like, that's what ends up saving. I think Holly and him have that very, like, tense relationship, which is why, obviously, they were attracted to each other.
Yeah, because they both want to be successful.
Right, because she is successful. She's, yes. She's not the president, because the president's there, but she's very, I think she's, like, the vice president or yeah. something. It's been a year since I've seen Die Hard, and I haven't watched it yet, guys. Please forgive me.
But yeah, I mean, like, and that's what their attraction is, and so it's hard, they can't, they're not going to ever...
They're almost both alphas. Because she is, you know, like, she didn't, and she is a mother, and she's a good mother, and he's arguably a good father, too, but they're both busy, and
right.
the way that society is, like, he's allowed to be busy, but
she's not.
But she sees the issue with that, like, right. Well, I'm able to manage...
Why can't
this yeah. like so you do see why they're attracted to each other. I mean what ultimately will end up in them divorcing is what also brings them together because exactly. they do see it. So
yeah.
and especially the first two they are together. Like yeah. and well, they end up falling in love again. Well, clearly well to be fair, I haven't seen all the Lethal Weapons,
yeah.
but I have seen all the Die Hards.
I mean, I know which, I've seen
unfortunately
them.
I've seen all the Die Hards.
Well, I think you know like another thing that we didn't really talk about it, but McClane's wife, Holly, she is really strong woman. Even when they're in this situation, you know, like, she's not screaming next to the copier. She's, you know, like, she is just as much showing her strength in that hostage situation.
Well, too. Especially when she realizes that John's the one that yeah. Alan Rickman's talking to. And then they come out and ask who Holly Gennaro is, and she doesn't... At first, she doesn't say anything, and then she realizes that he's going to start picking people off.
Yeah.
And so she comes forward. She doesn't. And they kind of, the actress was talking about this last night, Bonnie Bedelia
yeah.
was saying, like, she's not a damsel in distress until the end where she has a gun to her head, but she's doing that to save everybody. She has to make that executive decision that it's me or everybody that works for me.
Yeah.
And she's like, and she does have faith that her husband's going to come. She's like,
well, there's
she's
one like, thing he's good at, it's his job. And yes. that's what he, in essence, even though he's not on the beat or whatever,
right.
he is doing his job.
Yes. Also, which Lethal Weapon does have a ton of Christmas stuff in it because they have Christmas music and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But Die Hard has one of my favorite things, which is where, I don't know why that's my favorite thing, but where John kills one of the guys and he sends him down and he writes on the sweater, he says, ho, ho, ho. Now I have all the machine guns or something like that, which is always, like, one of my favorite things. Do you think one plays more into Christmas time than the other one?
I don't really think so.
I think they're both about equal.
I would say, like, one thing I like about both of those movies is they can take place at any time of the year. It's good yes. that it's Christmas. Christmas adds that little extra bit of thing in it.
Right.
Because we're all thinking about family at Christmas time. And so, like, that part. But I think... If your relationship is broken, like McClane, if it had been the 4th of July, he would still have gone to try to get back to
him. Oh, don't worry, Mom, because if you want a Die Hard movie that takes place on the 4th of July, you only have to look at Live Free or Die Hard, number 4. Mom, I have the perfect movie. Mom, good news.
But what I'm saying
is... No, yeah, like, it could, like both of these movies could take place at...
Yeah.
Either time. I think Shane Black's more specific with why it takes place at Christmas time, because he has had... all these movies that,
yes.
and I should confess, I think I've seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but I haven't seen it in a very long time. That's the one with Robert Downey Jr. and
I've seen it
Val
too,
Kilmer.
I've seen more than one.
Yeah, it's been a while, so yeah. I cannot speak to that. But Shane Black, I think Shane Black is obviously something about Christmas. He sees that.
Yeah.
He sees, like, that Christmas is almost, actually I think Lethal Weapon is a little more Christmassy. I'm admitting this on tape. because it does, like, that's, Christmas is one of the characters of it, like, it's
right.
like just as much as, like, actually Los Angeles is the character for both of them as well, more
yes.
so Nakatomi Plaza, obviously, like, that one specific location.
Yeah.
That's another thing, I really like contained action movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that it takes place on one night and it's just in one building with Die Hard,
right.
Like, and he has to go up and then he has to go right back down, so, and he struggles to get to one, and then he's like, I have to get to the other,
yeah,
which he was just at, and then he has to go, like, whereas Lethal Weapon obviously takes place over a couple days.
Right.
Or more than that, because...
Well, they both have a ticking clock.
Yes.
But in Die Hard, it's, the clock is, like, more in your face, and you know, I mean,
right.
like, that's, here we know, in Lethal Weapon, we know that the heroin delivery is coming, Right. And so they need to take everything, they need to finish it before that delivery comes in, which we don't really see that. I think we see more in the crime of the next movies. I mean, you know, you get more into the
detail. This is, like you were saying, this Lethal Weapon, like, obviously there's this crime that's taking place, but that's more the background where it is. It's Riggs and Murtaugh coming together in this one, which, again, they balance it really well, but which movie do you think has the better villain? Because I would argue that Hans Gruber is the better villain.
I would agree. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Alan Rickman, and I do think, like, when I saw it, not that I didn't like Bruce Willis, but I do like Alan Rickman. He is really strong. He's fun. Obviously he's a bad guy and he's killing a lot of people. So, but he does it in such a way that you like. He's engaging when he's on the screen.
He's very precise.
Yes.
Whereas, like, because he doesn't, especially, like, the, like, and he's, like, he's well-dressed. He's very, like, well-mannered. Not that, although Mr. Joshua is dressed for, like, brunch on the Cape, like, 15 times. And he's, like, a sweater and then a nice little button-up. Like, he's, like, dressed, like, he's, like, I'll be taking lunch. So a little sequester after this, after I murdered these people. And you're like, I don't know why you're dressed like that, but there's something about Alan Rickman. I like Hans Gruber. And I do like, I really like Die Hard 3, which that takes place in the summertime as well. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's interesting to see those villains that he doesn't, like, he'll kill if he has to.
Right.
Doesn't really want, they're more a means to an end. Like, he will kill people because he doesn't really care, but he doesn't need
that's
to.
That's not his objective. I mean, I think that's one thing that's really smart, too. It's like, even in Lethal Weapon, when they're killing people, they're doing it for a purpose. Because if you're, most people's want, like, most villains' motivation is they want something, money, power, something like that. They don't want 50 bodies stacked up in the basement.
Right.
I mean, that's a different story. That's like a serial killer thing.
Right.
But most of the time, the bad guys, killing people doesn't get them what they want. If it does, if it is leverage that they can use to get to what they want, which is why he's taking those hostages.
Right. And then he sends them up to the roof because they rate the roof to blow. Yes. But then they manage to, the roof still blows, but they manage to get most of the people. The only people that really end up dying is the president, the boss, and then the guy that pretends like he knows John, who's a big talker, who I'm sure is also using cocaine, because again, it's an 80s movie, and he's a businessman.
Sure, there was, yeah. That's it was a party.
It was, yeah, the 80s is just one big cocaine-fueled party.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think clearly Die Hard is the winner there.
No, I don't think they agreed on that. They're both great movies. They're fun. They're different.
There's something different with both of them that makes it so enjoyable.
Well, and especially, I mean, if you think about Christmas movies, I'm going to segue into Christmas movies here, and how you end up with all of this, like, kind of, it's snowy, and it's, like, dysfunctional family, or it's, like, falling in love, or, you know, all these different things. It's, like, nice to have a break from the regular Christmas movies to
which
pop
are like
in something that's a little
g-golly.
Right.
It's great that it's Christmas time.
You know how much I love those.
Yes. I was about to say, my mom and I really like happy Christmas movies. A lot of people like The Family Stone. We kind of feel like we got tricked into watching The Family Stone, which is, it has some very funny parts in it, but it's very sad.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't like It's a Wonderful Life.
No.
Which I was talking at work with someone about that, and she was like, yeah, I hate that movie. I was like, yeah, me too. Everybody else thinks it's a classic.
It is a classic,
but
not everyone has our, we are lucky that we like, Christmas is happy for us.
We do, yes. We're a big Christmas family, so it is one of those, like, I understand, like, the melancholy nature of this. Yeah. Emily, if you're listening to this, I know you love the Christmas shoes.
I know.
Is so depressing.
Yeah.
Tries to put it on, I'm like, no.
True story, the first time that song came on the radio, we heard sobbing in the back seat and realized that Courtney was listening to the words and crying her little heart out.
It's a sad song. I don't need that.
It's a sad song.
Like,
then they made a movie out of it.
I didn't see it. Emily, if you really want to do this, I'll do another podcast with you. We will do the Christmas shoes. I'll just be crying in the corner the whole time.
You're tearing up now even just thinking about it.
Yeah, just, oh, God. So in general, because Lethal Weapon is not just one of your favorite, like, movies that takes place at Christmas, like, Christmas time movie. You genuinely love Lethal Weapon. What about it makes it your favorite? Like, one of your favorites? Where, like, like, you know, you could only watch like one or two movies again. Like, why would you pick Lethal Weapon? Like, what, like, besides like kind of what we've talked about? Although I guess that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, it is. I mean, really, it's that relationship. I like that relationship between Riggs and Murtaugh.
Yeah.
And even, and I like the way it develops over the course of the whole series as well. And we see it, like, they don't ignore each other's faults, and they don't pretend that the other one, you know, like, they're not ever going to be the exact same person. But at their core, what matters to them, their morals, their values, are the same. And so that's fun. And it's a funny relationship. Like, even when, we didn't talk about this, but when they were at the shooting range.
Oh, yeah.
And Murtaugh hits the bullseye when they're both going to be on the same sheet. And Riggs pushes out further and makes it into a smiley face. I mean, you like that. That's fun. It's not like...
A good chemistry.
They do.
They do. And... that is one of the better, and Lethal Weapon is the better series of Die Hard and Lethal Weapon, because it's more consistent.
Right.
Whereas Die Hard, I think there's two really good movies, and then the other ones, like, I don't think they're able to recapture what made it so great, like, for whatever reason.
Well, and the thing is, I think, and I say this just, it's just my own personal opinion, is that sometimes when something becomes successful, they want to make a sequel, they want to do it again.
Right.
And... Some stories are not, don't need to be made again.
No.
You've kind of wrapped it up. And it feels like with Die Hard, they wrap that up.
With the first one, yeah. They don't really need, like, well, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that John McClane keeps getting himself, he accidentally falls into all these situations. Like, all this shitty stuff. He has, like, the worst karma in the world.
Right.
Because he happens to fall into all this.
Right.
Like, out of nowhere, like.
Yeah, so there's not, and they, you know, like, obviously... As a viewer, you want to go back in that world. You want to see it again, but the story was wrapped up, so they'd have to do something very different to kind of make a different movie.
Right.
And it's kind of like Speed, right? The first Speed's so great.
Right.
And then it's like, well, how would this even happen again?
Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Yeah,
it's which is one of my favorite sequel titles ever. It's up there with Too Fast, Too Furious, and Fast Furious, Tokyo Drift.
Yes.
Like, it is, like Speed works once.
It does.
You don't need to do it again.
No.
It works. Oh, I could do a whole. Speed is one of my favorite movies. I love Speed.
I like Speed, too.
But yeah, it does. Like Lethal Weapon makes sense. Because it's a series. It's go. Like,
right.
That's it.
And but, because the relationship between these two people. I mean, they because it's in their real everyday life.
Right. That's one of those.
We can see another section to that story because... This was their life.
Right.
They weren't, like, you know, trapped on a plane, trapped on a bus, trapped in a tower.
Which is great, but Lethal Weapon actually has, like, they chose this. They're doing this. That's what makes it.
Yeah.
Well, Mom, thank you very much for talking Lethal Weapon with me. I really do appreciate it. Die Hard's the one, guys. Don't worry. I made sure that was known.
Okay.
So, thank you, Mom. Thank you for recording with me.
You're welcome.
And guys, so this is going to be the last regular episode for 2019, but I have a couple bonus episodes I'm doing. We're doing the best of the decade. Me and my brother are going to go through each year of the decade and choose our favorite film from that year. And then we're going to do the top five of 2019 as well. We're just waiting for Rise of Skywalker to come out to see where that hopefully lands on the list.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So thank you guys, and I will see you next time.